Hello, I'm Scott Soshman.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and this is the Stay Hot Stan Kroenke Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Now, we don't have Stan with us, and even if he was with us, which I don't think he would do, you don't get the nickname Silent Stan by going on all the podcasts and all the TV shows. And probably could get Josh. I could get Josh's son to sort of evaluate the Stay Hot Stan Kroenke. I think he would have liked it, sort of got into it. Even though the Avalanche are a little bit of a disappointment, not making the Stanley Cup Finals this year. The Rams, won the Super Bowl, but what were they, 5-12 last year, I believe?
Bad right? Season, for
sure. Yeah, they're great. I was talking to one of the executives over there shortly before the season ended, or it must have been, maybe it was right after it ended, and it was good news, bad news. The good news, we're still defending champions. The bad news is, we're going to be 5-12 until next year starts. So, I mean, that's how it is. That's the life in pro sports, right? You would think that even Cubs fans, Red Sox fans, I laugh at Red Sox fans now that just, oh, the team stinks and there's all this. Remember when it wasn't so long ago, boy, if I could just taste a World Series, if I could just get one in my lifetime, then they give you multiple World Series and they're back to criticizing you because you stink and you're not winning again. Same with Cubs. You just won the Super Bowl a few years ago. It is not the easiest thing to do in the NFL, sustained excellence. It is not. You have to have an otherworldly player like Tom Brady. You have to have some players playing at far below their value because of the hard salary cap. Or you have to do something better than everybody else. Like, you have the magic wand of how to draft players. And I think that was a little piece of, it was Brady and Belichick, I get it. But I think the Patriots built a better mousetrap that they understood the value of the lower draft picks, that you could get great value and position-specific players that cost you less money further down in the draft. So they would further, they would trade away picks and move down. I think that was a little bit of their success, but other teams are starting to understand that as well, a little bit of the analytical game of the NFL.
And if it is a what have you done for me lately kind of world, looking broadly at the Stan Kroenke portfolio, it's pretty amazing what the last 2 years have brought. You mentioned February 2022, the Rams win the Super Bowl. A few months later, the Colorado Mammoth, the NLL indoor lacrosse team that Stan Kroenke owns, wins the NLL title. A few months after that, the Colorado Avalanche win the Stanley Cup title. This year, for folks who follow English Premier League soccer, Arsenal had a historic season, just got nipped at the end, finishing second in the Premier League, but a Champions League slot by almost all measures, a really successful Arsenal season. And as we talk right now, Scott, the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals, heavily favored in the NBA Finals, we should add, against the Miami Heat. It really is a historic 18 months of success here for Stan across the entire sports portfolio. I think the only team that he owns there that we didn't mention is the Colorado Rapids. And I don't know enough to know exactly how they're doing in MLS. But outside of that, it's championships all up and down here for all of Kroenke's teams.
Yeah, and it's just a simple win that he got the team to LA and had this mega real estate development. So the cash registers are spinning there as well. The only place he isn't winning is sort of in the cable negotiation game, where his teams are not being seen on Comcast or in Comcast homes, which makes up a majority of the state of Colorado. I mean, there are other ways like Fubo, you can see the Avalanche and the Nuggets, but that this impasse has been going on for a while. But then again, the big argument, is, oh, you're fans, you're losing fans, you don't have reach. Dodgers went a very long time without a deal on some of those operating systems, because they had to deal with Time Warner. So they went a very long time without full coverage. And it seems, at least from where I sit, things are okay with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So perhaps it's not the imperative that many thought it was.
And as a teaser for something we'll talk about later in the show, that the whole local rights world is changing so rapidly that I do wonder if the carriage fees in a lot of cities, and Denver maybe one of them, kind of become a thing of the past as all of those local rights reshuffle. We'll put a pin on that until later. I do want to mention, Scott, for folks who are curious, just about what Stan paid for this empire of teams, right? I don't have the Arsenal number in front of me, but he bought the Avalanche, the Nuggets, and what is now Ball Arena for $450 million, and then bought the major stake in the Rams at a $750 million valuation.
About what somebody's about to pay for the Ottawa Senators.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We value across the whole thing, all of the entire empire, as a $12.9 billion sports property. Ironically, and you and I joked about this before, Bloomberg, which is, for my money, the most reliable list of billionaire worth, gives him a $15 billion net worth. So we value the teams at just about $13 billion, and Bloomberg has his entire, all of his business, including the real estate stuff, at about $15 billion. But Stan is one of the richest, I think one of the top five richest sports team owners in the U.S., and again, Nuggets, we can get into the basketball now. Nuggets facing the Heat in an NBA final, Scott, that I think even the most avid NBA fans would not have predicted that this was going to be the two teams that were showing off even when the playoffs started.
Yeah, I would have maybe said, you know, Denver there.
Okay.
I wouldn't have written off the Miami Heat and Eric Spoelstra. And by the way, for folks who don't know, there is a basketball lineage with Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, I would deal with his father, John. I don't know if he was president or what the title was, with the New Jersey Nets, playing, I believe at the time, at something that was known as Brendan Byrne Arena, yeah, where the tractor pulls and things were very, very good, but the team was not. And John is known as a really great marketer. And you would drive up and down the turnpike and you would see the billboards change. It was like, come see Shaq and the Magic, you know, playing. They know there weren't a lot of Nets fans there. They needed to get people in the building. So he would do whatever it took to get people to come. And I know the anecdote that you love to tell has to do with the jersey. So I'm going to let you do it because you tell it so well. But it really is a creative thing that I haven't seen very often.
Yeah, this was a little bit later, probably in the late 90s or even early 2000s. But I remember growing up in New Jersey, there was a time when the Nets were advertising and giving away at games reversible jerseys. And I don't know who the star on the Nets was. Let's just say it was Richard Hamilton or maybe it was Jason Kidd. But you would go to a game and you could have a jersey that was, you know, in one side was Jason Kidd Nets and then turn it inside out and it's Kobe Bryant on the Lakers. Or you turn it inside out and it's LeBron James on the Cavaliers, whatever it is. And from what I remember of friends telling me going to games, you would go to these games and everybody would be turning the jersey inside out and wearing the visiting star, right? Because it was almost always a bigger name and a more popular player than the star on the Nets. So I do think, I'm sure it's part of the same motivation here, which is the thought that if your team is not, you know, lighting it up on the scoreboard or in the standings, that maybe the way to get people to come to games is to highlight who they're going to get to see on the visiting team, right? And I don't think you're going to see too many teams doing direct reversible jersey type promotions anymore. But I believe, and this is probably an overlap with Eric Spoelstra's father, but there was definitely at that time, this idea at the Nets that the way to fill their arena was less to talk about the Nets and more to talk about who was playing the Nets.
All right, I'm going to give you one more anecdote that I learned from John Spoelstra back in the day.
Is it before the rubber duck? No.
Back in the day, you know, before we had all this digital stuff, the way the NBA often promoted itself and fans around the world would get VHS cassette tapes. And they would be games, they would be highlight videos that, and the like. So, of course, John probably had a trunk full of this stuff, you know, and he would bring it home. And he told me the story of a young Eric, I don't know what age, but let's just say 8, 9, 10, 11, whatever it was, of a young Eric who was a basketball player. He would take one tape in particular, and it was the Isaiah Thomas dribbling tape. And he would study the crossover, the Isaiah crossover. One of his, obviously, one of his best moves. And you could see, and back, you remember back then, you once again, you're probably too young, but back then, the DVRs, or the VCRs, rather, had a cord. And you'd, you know, you rewind, zzz, and then you could play. You could see the spot on the tape that Eric would rewind like 5,000 times to study Isaiah's crossover. So it was no surprise a kid with that level of attention went on to become the film guy for the Miami Heat and is now the head coach. But I mean, that's not business, but I like the fact that promotional DVDs, not DVDs, VHSs became, you know, sort of obsessive for Eric Spoelstra, and that moved him on. And, but by the way, my head was kind of moving when you were talking about five richest owners. So I'm reading a list here. Richest owners in sports and international. So I'm going to go down and like cross off. We'll just do U.S. Mukesh Ambani, number one. Okay, so the richest U.S. sports team owner, Steve Ballmer. Yep. Not a surprise there. Number two, Rob Walton.
Walton. Ballmer's richer than Walton.
Ballmer, 80 billion, Walton, 57.6.
Gotcha.
Okay. You know, what's a few billion among friends? Pinot, that's not there. Red Bull. So we count that. That's Red Bull. Jim Ratcliffe, we don't count that. Masayoshi Son, we're not counting that. David Tepper, 18.5. Okay. Dan Gilbert, 18. Dan Gilbert. Steve Cohen, 17.5. Robert Pera, 15.5. Jerry Jones, all right, that's 13. So, all right, we're right in that area. He's where that he area. Is right in that area. But certainly winning has something to do with valuation because, you know, people want sponsors pay more. There's just greater value around it. So good job, Stan Kroenke.
Before we move on from the NBA, it does feel like to me that this NBA Finals could shape up to be the Nikola Jokic star turn big title to accommodate or to accompany all the other things that he's accomplished and achieved in his life. I still think that a lot of casual basketball fans maybe have not watched him all that much, don't understand the lengths to which he is a absolute superstar talent-wise. And I think we've seen this in the past, Scott, that there are, I think Giannis accomplished this a few years ago, right? When the Bucks won the championship, where it was clear that he was one of the best players in the NBA, but watching him win a championship and the halo effect and all of the other ancillary business things that come along with that, I would argue launched Giannis into a totally different stratosphere of stardom. And it feels like the cards are shaping up very well. If the Nuggets do win the NBA title in the next 2 weeks, that this could be Nikola Jokic's moment as well.
And not only that, I believe while Giannis, he you know, he's like that philosopher in, yep, in the postgame, and people are drawn to that. Jokic is very similar. Mm-hmm. He downplays the me, it's the we. He downplays the individual accolades. He doesn't care. He just wants to win. And you get the sense, and this is weird thing of fatigue of certain players. Like there was this, why is Jokic even in the running for three straight MVP awards? And who would you rather have? I think we'd have probably near unanimity, and this is no shot at Joel Embiid. But if you said to all the general managers in the league, who would you start a team with, Jokic or Embiid? I don't know too many who would say Embiid.
Agreed.
I mean, this guy, it's his coming out party for sure. He's a freakish basketball player. And I am not aware, by the way, of his endorsement portfolio. I have not really seen anything that he's done and or anything his face is attached to. We have to have some of our folks look into what is the portfolio, and maybe it's international. I'm not sure. But I think you're right. This is going to be, if the Nuggets win, this will be a coming out party for Nikola Jokic because he's got everything that marketers want.
And we've talked about how, and we don't need to get back into my theory on that, but when Giannis won the championship, celebrating with his brother on Zoom was such this great moment. If Nikola wins the championship, get me the camera on him and his brothers.
His right? brothers, the, yeah. This is the Gronkowski's ready to happen. This is the next, yeah.
Yep. The two Jokic brothers also feel like they are. That is the thing I want to see. I don't care about the post-game interview. I don't care about the trophy celebration. I want to see Nikola and his two brothers celebrating in person. So in some ways, there's another kind of parallel there as well, where there's a family aspect to this star's, you know, big NBA championship moment as well.
And they're all centers, or they're all like, it's not like you get on the point. There's no point guard Jokic, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
When you know the Jokic brothers, when they're standing around, it's pretty clear who they are.
100%.
Right. If the Gronkowski brothers are can have a show.
Yeah, they're the Eastern European Gronkowskis.
This
yeah.
would be the Eastern European Gronkowskis. That's exactly right. And I would watch that. I would like to see all the things that they do. And then flip it to the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler moved around quite a bit. big star. Not sure how the ratings will do. You know, this is one of those where the NBA, as always, and the partners, they better hope that we're not done in four. Even if they're close games, a lot of the NHL series, they were close series. Each game was close, but the same team won the first four. That's a huge problem. If one team goes up three, or if there are two blowouts, you might have a little bit of trouble with the numbers on this one.
I did see that the Game 7 of the Heat Celtic series was, I think, the most watched playoff game in Turner.
From 3-0 to Game 7, history, which is all they want.
Yeah, so and obviously a lot of those people are probably watching because it's the Celtics, but the Heat were also playing in that game, and we're obviously not a ratings podcast, but you're right. The overarching thing here for networks is four games bad, seven games good, and something in the middle you can talk about, you know, cities and marketplaces and things like that. Scott, let's shift gears. Let's talk hockey.
You know, I'm always up for that.
NHL Stanley Cup showdown between the Las Vegas Knights just a few years into their NHL existence. And then on the other end, the Florida Panthers, a team that a month ago when they were down 3-1 to the Bruins, a historically good regular season team, looked like they were going to be very quickly one and done. I think they've won, I'm going to butcher the number, 12 of their last 13 playoff games, something like that. So some incredible number rattled off in a row. As a hockey fan, I'm really excited about the matchup. I think this is a very fun pairing of two teams that maybe don't have the absolute star power that the Oilers or the Maple Leafs might have brought, but are extremely deep and play very physical. What are your thoughts on NHL playoffs?
My thoughts are hockey fans will love it, but the big problem that the NHL has is connecting with casual sports fans. The NHL has still yet to figure out how it can break away from its core audience. How is it going to attract casual fans to its marquee games? And yeah, I'm not sure Panthers and Vegas Golden Knights, like if I asked 100 people on the street, so if I say Jonathan Marchessault, excuse me, what?
Mark Stone.
Yeah. Mark Stone, Sergei Bobrovsky, anybody? You know, I don't think that it will get much of a reaction. And by the way, maybe that's true of Nikola Jokic too. I'm not, but obviously basketball on a global basis, we'll just simply have more eyeballs on the championship series. The NHL is still struggling. It would help to have a Connor McDavid, a name people recognize, and Austin Matthews, again, a name people, or the sort of that historical sense of the Maple Leafs playing, or the Rangers playing in the championship series. But it's not here. And also, by the way, this one's on TNT, which has the smallest reach of all the possibles that were there. It's not going to be on ESPN. It's not going to be on ABC. Those are alternating every year. This year happens to be TNT. They really better hope that this goes 6-7 games if they want some sort of decent number. Otherwise, I would fear that this could be one of the lower rated finals that we've seen. And by the way, should we plug what we're trying to do for next week? Why not?
Yeah.
It is not done yet, but we are hoping to have Vegas LP Joe Maloof. Family used to own the Sacramento Kings, so we're hoping to have Joe Maloof on, and we're also trying to have Sean Thornton, former player, who is now the chief revenue officer of the Florida Panthers. We are trying to get those two guys to sync their schedules. Not the easiest thing to do when your teams are about to play in the NHL, but we're going to see if we can sync them up, chat with them on Monday for Tuesday's pod. So hopefully that comes to fruition.
One other thought on NHL, this is this would be, if the Vegas Knights win, the first major U.S. franchise title for a Las Vegas sports team in the modern era, right? We've talked a lot about how in the past decade, Vegas went from having no major U.S. sports teams to having a plethora and maybe even too many. If the Vegas Knights win, I can't wait for the parade, for the ceremony. Just the way that Vegas obviously does big events, does celebrations, does parties in a unique way relative to the rest of the cities. Las Vegas's first major U.S. championship parade, I am going to have very high expectations for if it does come to that in about 2 weeks, Scott.
So what do you think if they win the parade. It's in Henderson. It's in Summerlin. Or, well, gee, if only
maybe
there
further
was
out there. Yeah,
only
Joshua
if there
Tree.
Was an iconic place that perhaps a float with a Stanley Cup could go. I'm not really sure. Florida, I guess maybe we put it on the water. I mean, Tom Brady. He made that a thing, right?
The Lightning did so much on
the boat parade. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. But we shall wait and see. Speaking of seeing, you know what folks aren't going to see right now, or not see the same way as they saw, if we're talking seeing and sawing?
Padres games.
That would be the San Diego Padres, yes. And we had an inkling that this was coming, that Diamond Sports Group would use the Padres because of the rights fee that they were paying that team, that this would be the test case where they said, you know what? We're out. We're not paying anymore. And surely we were right. And the Major League Baseball has now taken over the production of Padres games. You can pay $20 a month. You can go to Fubo. There are other ways to see it. But what you're used to, sort of that RSN, here's the first one we've seen. Go bye-bye.
Yeah, Diamond Sports Group, which we've talked about a lot in the past few months, one of the biggest stories in sports business going right now, owns rights to, I think it's a little over 40, maybe 42 local rights to 42 different teams in the NHL, MLB, and NBA, going through bankruptcy right now, but up until this week had paid, albeit late in a lot of cases, had paid all of the rights fees they owed to teams. This Padres is the first team that they have actually missed the payment on and are not going to pay. So what this looks like in San Diego is that Tuesday night's game, Padres game, was the last game that's going to be appearing on that Bally Sports Network in San Diego. And then after that, Major League Baseball is taking it over. And the games will be free to stream for the first, I believe the first 5 days up and through Sunday. And then the MLB is going to be selling them $20 a month or $75 for the full season for Padres fans to stream them on their computers. There's also, you can watch it on cable, Fubo, I believe are options as well. But this is something Major League Baseball has been bracing for a while. I would expect the Padres have also been bracing for a while. Diamond said in a statement, Scott, and I wrote it down here, the economics of the Padres contract was not aligned with market realities. This is a contract that pays the Padres, I think it's $60 million annually. Obviously, Diamond does not believe that they are getting $60 million worth from that payment. And we'll see what this new reality does. I'm assuming, and we talked to Brian Lawler, the Scripps sports president, a couple weeks ago about this exact topic, and he made it very clear. He said, look, your teams are not going to be getting the same dollar figure number from their local rights under whatever the new model is going to be versus the RSN big check model. It's up to them to find other ways to monetize increased reach, more availability for fans, and things like that. So the Padres are losing out on probably a very significant chunk of that $60 million, at least in the near term. And what can they do with the fact that more Padres fans are going to be able to watch and for cheaper amounts of money, be able to watch games from now on to the rest of the season? How do they use that to their advantage in other parts of the business?
All right, you know where I'm going. If I say eyeballs, where am I going? Which story? The one I've heard forever. John Skipper. You know,
John Skipper.
Run ESPN.
Course,
what did
yeah.
John Skipper always say? Get me the eyeballs. It is my job to figure out how to monetize. However, if I am Peter Seidler, owner of the Padres of San Diego, and I have shelled out boku bucks for Manny Machado, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr., my team, by the way, is not like first place, right? Not really winning.
No.
All
yep.
that much right now. How nervous am I? I have a very big commitment. I am losing a significant source of what I thought was going to be an annual revenue stream. Yes, my team will be seen by more people now. The question is, what are they willing to pay? How are they going to do it? How do I monetize? Can I monetize quickly? This changing landscape has got to have many of these owners very, very nervous. I mean, that's the $60 million question here is, what happens to the Padres when they are missing out a chunk of this revenue that they were counting on?
And to do some back of napkin math there, so $60 million a year is what Bally's was paying the Padres. If we say that this new option, let's just use the $75 a year price point, right? You would need 800,000 people in San Diego to pay that $75 $1 a year price point to make up $60 million. The entire population of San Diego looks to be about 1.3 million, right? So you need more than two thirds of the entire entire population to buy the $75 a year streaming option to make up $60 million. Now, that's obviously some very crude math, but the whole point there is that you're not going to get close to that again. So as this shift happens, exactly what you're talking about, Scott, it's a question of, can you get more ticket sales out of people because it's easier to watch the games? Can you get more merchandise sales? Are there other ways that you can structure your business in which the fact that there's more availability? When Major League Baseball took over these rights, Scott, on Tuesday night, the statement they put out essentially, you know, was making a big point of the fact that they were almost tripling the reach of Padres games now. Whereas it was 1.13 million under the old model, they think that they can reach maybe the availability is up over 3 million people now. So there is an increased reach there. Now it's just a matter of, you know, how you monetize each.
I would say of those one whatever million, how many were actually tuning in?
Like a very small percentage.
Right. And now expanding the pool by 3x doesn't. I don't think you'll get that same exponential growth in number of eyeballs watching.
100% agreed.
Right. And in that, and at the same thing, it was a dueling statement at the time. Diamond said, "Well, this is happening because we can't get the direct to consumer streaming rights. That's where, you know, the teams, they fought to get that from baseball. The teams control the streaming routes. They see that as a long term." Play for growth and revenue, but there needs to be some sort of explanation, I think, as to why these streaming rights are so valuable. How much are they worth to the team right now? Could you do it on a 1 year off bait? You know, could you have done a short term deal? Give them this year, next year. Well, I don't know. They're all things that perhaps could have been negotiated and were not, or tried and did not. But we know these teams are going to cling to the streaming rights moving forward. That they know that direct to consumer is a way where they can monetize, further monetize, better monetize the eyeballs that they do reach. So that remains to be seen. But that it was this MLB saying, "Oh, but more people will be watching or available to watch." Yeah, but you know, it's not like you had 100% of those eyeballs available watching already. You're going to go into more homes, but how many really want what you're showing? So that'll be interesting to watch.
And different, the last point on this for me, the different leagues have different approaches to digital rights, right? Some do it league-wide. Some leagues have more deferred to the teams on those. So it'll be really interesting, I think, to see, Scott, are the Padres one of a handful of the 42 that Bally's decides it doesn't want to pay for? Are the Padres, just by virtue of the schedule, the first of many, 20, 25, 30, whatever it is, how many, once each of these contracts expires, how many of these contracts or payments is Bally's willing to skip or wants to pay? Time will tell on that. But again, this is a big moment just because it is the first actual breaking for Diamond Sports Group refusing to pay a partner.
So in the metaphor we've been going with RSNs, that the melting glacier, like, is this a piece of the ice cap floating off?
This is a cleaving
of the ice shelf where a big piece is now. You see it separated. You get the video. You get the splash, and it's now separated and floating away. We can go with that.
Yes.
By the way, I noticed for the first time. Do you know you say my name a lot during the podcast?
Hmm.
Yeah, mid sentence, use it at the back of the sentence. I don't care.
Maybe it's a fill instead of saying maybe I just I just use Scott.
Could be.
And anyway, like it, I can stop. I can use other names.
I'm okay. Yeah, I know you got some of those. He is Eben Novi Williams on the Twitter, Novi_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on the Twitter @Soschnick. Our producer is Matt Whitehurst. Thank you very much, Matt. Digital media editor, Cora Veltman. She loves it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.